brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Kabloom, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and this is Stuff You Should Know.
Yeah, just a couple of regular guys are sitting around chatting.
That was good.
No, that was
I
terrible.
Know I genuinely didn't think you were going to say geysers.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a little slow today.
This was a pretty cool article, I thought. I knew a lot about geysers, but I did not know exactly what was going on there.
Yeah.
In fact, I was wrong on a couple of key points.
Oh, really?
Yes, which I will not point out.
Oh, come on.
I thought they spit out lemonade, first of all.
Yeah.
And I thought there was a little guy down there doing it.
Oh, gotcha. Leprechauns?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what everybody thinks.
So I was wrong on both of those points.
Do we have a geyser myth sound effect?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Does this count as weather? No.
This is earth science.
Earth science.
Biogeochemical processes.
Okay. I just know you're trying to beef up our weather.
This is not weather.
It's not weather.
Although it does begin with weather.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
When something precipitates, that's weather.
Sure.
And precipitation precipitates the explosion of a geyser.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Chuck.
Yes.
I have no geyser introduction, man. You can't blame me, though. Like, I looked.
Yeah.
And there is really not a lot going on geysers.
I thought you might tell the story about the people in 1903 who died.
I was going to, but I didn't want to just usurp it.
Okay.
But let's do that, though, since you brought it up. Because, I mean, I thought about that, too. I was like, whoa, hang back, Josh, hang back.
Well, apparently, geysers can kill you. And, you know, when you see something like Old Faithful go off, that's why you're 300 feet away watching it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be on top of the thing.
Right.
But apparently, in 1903, in New Zealand, which is lousy with geysers, some tourists visiting there got caught in a jet at
Waimangu
Valley.
Nice, that was good.
And it killed all four people and carried them more than a mile away.
Yes,
that is sad.
And after we explain how geysers work, I think we should mention that again, because once I understood how geysers worked,
yeah,
and then I read that, I was like, those people met a terrible, terrible demise.
Sure.
Like, that was a terrible way to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's tantamount to getting thrown into a volcano or caught in dropping into the cracks of an earthquake. And they're all kind of related, as it turns out.
Yeah, or being bludgeoned to death.
Which is not related.
No, but it's a pretty bad way to go, too.
To geothermal earth properties.
So, Chuck, geysers, as I learned from reading this article on HowStuffWorks.com, our beloved site, are actually kind of fragile, and there's not that many. This article
says 1,000?
There's 1,000 geysers, okay, roughly, in the world. And I read elsewhere that there's only about 50 geyser fields on the planet, and about 2/3 of those have 5 or fewer geysers.
Wow.
Which makes Yellowstone a pretty substantial repository of geyser and geyser-related activity.
Yeah, totally.
Because when you're talking geyser, you don't ever just talk geyser. You're also talking fumaroles.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking hot springs,
sure,
mud pots,
mm-hmm,
steam vents. And all of them are based around the same thing, which is there's some sort of geothermal activity that's relatively close to the Earth's surface.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's 3 components to a geyser. And they are water supply, plumbing system, and heat source.
Yeah, and I'm going to argue a 4th later on.
Okay. Later, though? I have to wait?
I'm going to call it, we'll just go ahead and say what it is, which is remoteness.
Right.
And then we'll circle back.
Like it's detached from its family.
That's right. It becomes very remote. So a water supply. Let's start there, because if you ain't got water, you ain't got no geyser.
Yeah. And I saw in this article that rivers can often form the water supply. I didn't see that elsewhere. For the most part, from what I can gather, is that the water supply is precipitation,
yeah,
rain and snowmelt percolating through the Earth's crust over 500 or 1,000 or so years.
Yeah.
And then it trickles down to the point where it comes in contact with, like we said, relatively shallow geothermal activity. usually very, very young volcano or mm-hmm. volcanic activity, or very, very old, like in the throes of death volcanic activity.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And it can be anything from magma to cooled magma, but it's very hot rock, and it's close enough to the surface that this water doesn't evaporate. It starts to trickle back up.
Yeah, and when you say close, 3 miles down seems like a long way down. But if you're talking the planet Earth,
it's nothing.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
If you're talking magma, it's pretty close. If you're talking tectonic plates, it's pretty close.
It's closer than you want it to be, pal.
Yeah. All right, so go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, number two, the plumbing system.
Right.
Very important. The plumbing system is a series of fissures that run miles beneath the surface. And one important aspect of these fissures is they are basically sealed shut.
Yeah.
With silica from rhyolite. It's
right.
Volcanic rock. And like these minerals have sealed this rock shut.
Right. So,
it's a really important part of it.
That water that's percolating down,
yeah.
when it heats up and starts to travel back up, it takes that silica, that rhyolite with it.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of acts as a sealant along these pipes. So, over 500,000 years, however long it takes for it to go back up, it's sealing it and it's making it watertight.
Well, yeah. And I imagine. I didn't read this, but I imagine that this kind of activity happens elsewhere on the planet, but it's not sealed up, so it just disperses.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, because okay. one of the key ingredients of a geyser is pressure, high pressure.
That's right.
And to get that pressure in these pipes, you have to have rhyolite-coated, sealed pipes.
That's right.
Okay? So there's the plumbing system.
And the plumbing system varies. All geysers are different. Sometimes it's just like a huge, long vertical shaft. Sometimes it bends and turns and winds around.
Okay, so this is something that actually differentiates geysers from a hot spring. So a hot spring is just like a long vertical shaft coming
yeah.
from hot water up to the top,
mm-hmm.
but there's no obstruction. What makes a geyser is the fact that there's an obstruction in the plumbing, right?
That's right.
With a hot spring, water can just move freely up and down. There's just free exchange.
Yeah, and you soak around in it like a big lazy walrus.
Yeah, but there's no pressure. With a geyser, there's some sort of obstruction where either, say, the water on its way back up enters this wide pool
mm-hmm.
that bottlenecks at the top. So now you
yeah.
have pressure. There's a bunch of different pipes feeding into one pipe, and they all connect to the same place, another bottleneck. Or this pipe of water is so wide and so deep
yeah.
that the pressure from the water above the water at the bottom
yeah.
is so tremendous that for all intents and purposes, it creates a bottleneck just strictly out of pressure without an actual obstruction.
Yeah, just the weight of the water itself is so great.
So we have a water supply and a plumbing system that is sealed with rhyolite,
mm-hmm.
which makes it watertight and pressurized.
That's right.
And then some sort of means for pressure to build.
Yeah, and I guess we can go ahead and liken it to a pressure cooker now so you understand what we're talking about. If you've ever cooked with a pressure cooker at home, or if you've ever eaten at Chick-fil-A and eaten their delicious pressure-fried chicken.
Is that how they do it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
well,
the fries are pressure-fried.
God, it's so good.
That's why they're so juicy.
Man.
So water is standard water is just going to boil at like 100 degrees Celsius.
Standard water.
Standard
Not that
water.
Fancy French water.
If you're cooking with a pressure cooker, which means, you know, the lid is sealed shut,
mm-hmm.
it lets out some steam or else it would explode, obviously.
Okay.
It will actually take a lot more energy to boil and bubble up, which means more heat. And so you can actually cook in a pressure cooker at like 125 degrees.
Right. Because
which is substantial.
Under that pressure, it takes a lot more for what it was boiling water, but it's like air bubbles forming and rising to the top.
Yeah.
When the pressure is too great, it can't boil, so the boiling point rises, right?
Well, it boils, but it can't evaporate.
Well, no, it can't form the bubbles that carry to the top.
Right.
So it can't actually boil, so it's just sitting there in this high pressure environment at higher than boiling point temperatures. And the same thing's going on in a geyser, right?
That's right.
You've got the obstruction, you've got this heated water, and you have a tremendous amount of pressure. Because, again, we're talking about miles deep, and that's quite a bit of pressure at the bottom, the water at the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
Over the course of a lot of time.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess it depends, but for a geyser to form and start,
mm-hmm.
They think the oldest one is between 5,000 and 40,000 years old.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So it takes a little while because, you know, the plumbing has to seal up and everything. But as that pressure builds and that heat increases, you can reach temperatures of like 400 or 500 degrees Fahrenheit of this water, and it's still not boiling, right?
That's right.
And then eventually it does boil. It overcomes that pressure threshold.
Well, it finds its way through to the escape route, mm-hmm. which is the top of the surface, and it'll just, and that's not the eruption. It'll
no.
just squirt a little bit of water out.
It'll go glug.
And think, wow, that was a big relief. And such a big relief that the steam all of a sudden expands to 1,500 times the volume of the water. It's like if you're ever boiling, you ever steam vegetables in your house? Mm-hmm. The best way to steam vegetables is you don't just set it on a massive boil and cover it up. You get it to that massive boil, and then you turn that heat down low, and all of a sudden that pressure drop creates like massive amounts of steam.
Right, and the reason why is because when you increase pressure, you increase the temperature that's the boiling point of water. If suddenly you have that temperature still, but the pressure decreases,
yeah.
that water in this geyser just flash vaporizes, and because there's a lot more volume to an equal amount of water and steam, that steam, like you said, expands to what, 1,500 times the volume?
Yeah.
And there's your geyser, pal.
Yeah, it's that's all of a sudden all the steam in the water just gets shot out. Depending on what kind of geyser it is, it's going to take different formations and be different heights and last different amounts of time.
Right.
But it'll keep going until it either runs out of water or it cools down enough for it to start all over again.
Yeah, and then it just starts all over again, which is how you get something like Old Faithful, right?
That's right.
Once it releases that that pressure and it shoots out, it's the whole process just begins again. And you have geysers like Old Faithful that erupt like on a pretty regular schedule. I think it's between like 60 and 85 minutes or something like that.
Well, I've got the new schedule.
They
have
okay.
The new schedule. Because it's been happening with less frequency and greater power in recent years.
Huh.
I think it said since 2000.
Okay.
And it's bimodal. They call it bimodal. And if you're going to Old Faithful in Wyoming,
okay.
There are generally two eruption durations now, either a long one, which is over 4 minutes, or a short one, which is about 2.5 minutes. And if you have just missed the short one, there'll be about an hour before your next eruption.
Okay.
If you have just missed the long one, then there's going to be about an hour and a half until the next one.
But either way, it's worth sticking around for, right?
Yeah, and it's funny if you go to the page, and there's obviously a webcam up where you can see it and stuff, but that's not as fun. But if you go to the webpage and they ask for tips on, you know, seeing it, they say, well, if there's a lot of people sitting around on the benches, that means there's one upcoming. Mm-hmm. If there's a bunch of people getting up and leaving, that means it just happened. It's like, wow, really?
Yeah.
That's the best you can do?
That sounds like hippie park ranger logic.
Exactly.
Okay, so, I guess we're on to, like, famous geysers, right?
Yeah, well, actually, quickly, I teased about the fourth thing being remoteness.
Yeah.
Apparently, in the last 50 years, producing energy with geothermal energy production has increased so much that it's affecting geysers. And so being remote is now believed to be one of the requirements to be a geyser because geysers are vanishing because of man.
So I was trying to figure this out. Maybe you can help me. That's because we dig down to these geysers or this geothermal activity. And in doing so, are we creating like a release valve so the pressure can't build as much?
I think so. I mean, they're using it to spin turbines to create energy. But I know you can also have like a geothermal system in your backyard.
Right.
Which I don't think it like creates steam.
So I feel like what we're doing then is creating artificial geysers, like creating an artificial pipe to let steam out, which would impact any natural geysers activity, I guess.
That might be what's going on.
Because like we said, they're very fragile.
Yeah.
Earthquakes frequently cut them off.
Right.
They also bring them back to life, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Like there was one called the Stroker geyser.
That would be Strokkur.
Yeah, and
not
that's
Stroker like Stroker Ace.
Right, right. So Stroker geyser is after the Icelandic. Well, Stroker is after the Icelandic verb to churn, and actually geyser is after the Icelandic verb to gush.
Yeah.
So this is all very Icelandic in origin.
But that would be G-E-Y-S-I-R.
Yes.
Geyser.
Okay.
That's how I pronounce it.
In Icelandic?
Sure.
I wonder how Bjork pronounces geyser.
Have you seen Kristen Wiig's impression of her?
Uh-uh.
Oh, it's really great.
Okay, so the Stroker geyser was actually, it was enacted in 1789 because of an earthquake. And then another earthquake hit in 1896, and it became inactive. It went dormant. And the locals said, we got to get our geyser back, man.
It's all blocked up.
So they cleared it off, and now it's running again.
I bet that was probably dangerous work.
Very dangerous
what do you
work,
think?
Yeah.
Another way, too, that humans are impacting is mineral extraction. Apparently, in 2003, they were extracting minerals in Chile, the second largest geyser field in South America, and it killed it, basically, from extracting gold and stuff.
Jeez.
Yeah, because basically they mess with the plumbing.
Yeah.
And then you're finished.
Because it's like you said, like in a pressure cooker, it has that little steam valve so it doesn't explode.
Right.
Geysers aren't supposed to have that.
Right.
If they have that, they just don't go off. They're like, well, fine, I'll just let some steam off.
Pull some steam off.
And that does happen naturally. There are steam vents located near geysers.
Oh, really?
Like Yellowstone's like, we have 10,000 geothermal, what is the word they use? Basically, different things. We have 10,000 geothermal different things.
Right.
The vast majority of those are like steam vents.
Oh, they're man-made?
No, they're natural, like,
oh,
they're like little steam releases that come up through fissures in the earth.
I thought you meant we put those in to make Old Faithful like safer or something.
No, they happen naturally.
Oh, that's good.
But I think it's the same thing as drilling a hole down to a geothermal different thing and tapping it to run a turbine.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
At least you didn't say interesting.
Interesting.
Man.
This stuff is very interesting. Old Faithful is a cone geyser. I'm not sure I understand the difference.
Yeah, it's a good difference.
Is it the outlet, like the shape of the thing above the earth?
Yeah, so with a cone geyser, the rhyolite bubbles up enough over time that it builds up and it forms a little cone,
gotcha.
And that's what the geyser shoots out of. And normally with a cone geyser, you have a big stream, a jet going
right.
into the air.
Like a fire
hundreds
hose.
Of feet. That one in New Zealand, the Waimangu geyser, that one streamed 1,475 feet into the air. And for those of you in New Zealand, that's 450 meters.
That's a world record, right?
Yeah.
1902?
Yeah. 1902, yeah.
A year before it killed people.
Right. And then it went dormant in 1904 because of a landslide, which makes me think, like, this thing's coming back.
That's
it just got to bubble back up.
Killed people and then shut down right afterward.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really had a really chaotic 2-year career. It's like a rock star that overdosed on heroin or something. But anyway, as I was saying, the cone shoots a jet into the air. The fountain shoots in a much more like chaotic stream, whatever. But it doesn't come up from a cone. It comes up from a pool.
Okay.
So at the surface, the geyser goes into a pool of water, and then that will erupt out of the water.
And that would be the Grand Geyser. That's the tallest regularly erupting geyser on the planet, and that is also in Yellowstone.
Yeah, tallest in that it shoots up in the air.
Yeah, 200 feet in crazy, fountainy, hard-to-predict fashion.
Yeah, which is pretty surprising, too, because a cone geyser shoots a jet straight up in the air, and this fountain geyser is still beating the average one.
Yeah, could you imagine if it was a cone geyser?
It'd be mind-blowing.
To the moon.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Stroker Ace geyser, the Steamboat geyser.
I like this guy.
Yeah, it apparently can shoot water up to 300 feet, but don't bother stopping by because it hasn't happened for 50 years. Or it can go 50 years between.
Yeah, it's finicky.
Yeah.
There's also the geyser, which is the OG geyser, because that's where the word came from. It's a geyser in Iceland. It was discovered in 1294. So it's the oldest known geyser on the planet, but they took some samples of the silica that forms the cone of the Castle Geyser in Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one they think is 5,000 to 40,000 years old. Apparently silica dating can use some work.
I did see one interesting little, and it wasn't a joke. It was almost like you could hear science guys laughing about it, though. You Geysers are always called geysers, even if they quit erupting.
Oh, gotcha.
But that ceases to be a geyser at that point. But once you have erupted, you're always called a geyser.
The cone formerly known as geyser?
Yeah, that's what I would call it. Shameful.
Let's see. Do you know that whole story about Prince doing that?
About changing his name?
Yeah.
No, I never knew the story behind it.
So he was locked in a contract with Sony that he didn't like, and Sony basically said...
You can't release an album as Prince?
Yes, but also that had something to do with him acting basically crazy. Like, he acted crazy on purpose to get out of his contract because there was some sort of clause where, like, if he went nuts or whatever, it would void his contract. So he did that, and he had that font released. And I remember he released it to the media. Like
his little symbol?
Yes,
yeah.
as like a font add-on, so you could just print the symbol when you were writing about him.
Oh, really?
And his contract with Sony was either voided or they gave it up or whatever, but he was basically like, I'll show you crazy if I need to get out of this contract.
Boy, one of the best concerts I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
Easy. And I don't even think I put it in my top five when we had that listener mail that time, but I probably forgot. It's probably in my top five.
I would like to see Prince sometime.
Man, he brings it.
He bought Yumi a bottle of water at a Miles Davis show at the Cotton Club.
Really? Wow.
Her friends came up to see the Lemonheads, and she's like, yeah, I'll go with you, and then found out that Miles Davis was playing. She's like, I'm going to go over here.
That's
she
such
went
a
by herself
great,
and
great
Prince
move.
Bought her a bottle of water.
Evan Dando, Miles Davis.
Exactly.
Let me think about that.
Yeah, sorry, ED. So that's Prince.
Oh, yeah. And geysers.
Oh, yeah, geysers, too. If you want to learn more about geysers, you can type that word, G-E-Y-S-E-R-S. That's the English spelling. We didn't do it Icelandically.
No.
But you type that in the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and it will bring up this fine, fine article. And I said search bar at howstuffworks.com, which means it's time for Plugfest.
What are we plugging today?
We're going to do horror fiction contest and Comic-Con real quick.
All right. If you are fans of the show over the past couple of years, then you know Halloween time means Josh and I read a scary short story.
Right.
H.P. Lovecraft first year.
Yeah.
Edgar Allan Poe last year.
Yeah. Yours this year?
SYSK fan this year.
Yeah. We're reaching out to the listeners who have some skills with writing horror fiction.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying enter the contest. Send us something 3,000 minimum, 4,000 word maximum.
Yeah.
You can't use a pseudonym. You have to have written it yourself. It can't have been published elsewhere. And you have to email it to howstuffworks_contests@discovery.com. In the email, you have to write, by entering the contest, I agree to abide by the contest rules. And you'll be all set.
Yeah, there's a lot of more specific rules, and you can find those at a blog post Josh put together about the horror contest rules.
Yeah, go to the blogs at How Stuff Works and look for the post. Stuff You Should Know, Horror Fiction Contest, get your official rules here. Read those. Don't
right.
go off of what we're saying. Just go off of the rules. And then send us your stuff.
Please do.
Yeah.
And what is the email address again?
HowStuffWorks_contests. It's plural.
Plural.
At discovery.com.
Okay.
And then Comic-Con, right?
Yeah, we're going to San Diego.
Yes, in like 2 days.
Comic-Con.
As of the release of this episode.
Yeah, we'll be like getting on a plane,
mm-hmm.
going to San Diego.
Yeah.
Getting liquored up.
Oh, yeah.
Kidding. And we are going to be doing a live podcast down there, and we were going to have some special guests, and it's going down Thursday, July 12th. And by this point, I believe we will have released the time
mm-hmm.
and the location on our Facebook page and Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Which is at SYSK Podcast and Stuff You Should Know. Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow.
Right. Cool. We did it.
Come on, see us.
It's time for listener mail.
All right, Josh, I'm going to call this, giving a local Brooklynite a plug for his election. But that's not how it started.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of a complicated title.
Yeah.
Guys, I just listened to your podcast, How Labor Unions Work, and I want to thank you for trying to give a very balanced story to what is a very complicated and contentious subject. As a former New York City union organizer, so this guy was the real deal. I am very familiar with the arguments against unions, but I truly believe American workers and the American economy are better off with unions than without. When unions are strong...
Typical union organizer.
When unions are strong, there is some counterpoint to this total acceptance of rampant greed that was essentially the cause of the financial meltdown of 2008. At this point, with unions at their weakest in a half century, we average Americans are being held hostage by corporations. This is what he says.
Right.
I have to say, in my line of work, violence was not the norm, but intimidation by the employer was constant. They did everything from threatening workers with being fired, lying to them and telling them they did not have collective bargaining rights, to telling them the union would only steal their dues and not get them a good contract.
That so is that's a deceptive HR person right there.
Yeah. Or they would tell workers they would work out individual deals with them if they would vote against the union. Like trying
Whoa.
To break. Yeah, that's pretty hairy. Even once when we were organizing at a Catholic hospital, they told the workers they were going against God if they tried to organize.
Yeah. Can you see like those priests like union breaking and
yeah.
cracking heads with metal batons?
The only problem I had with your podcast was the lack of coverage you gave to the Triangle shirtwaist fire.
We mentioned that.
He said it could have been more. He
well,
said it was.
It could deserve its own podcast.
Well, that's true.
We mentioned it.
He said it was one of the deadliest industrial accidents in the United States history. Last year, hundreds of people came out to commemorate the 100-year anniversary.
Yeah, I remember.
Of the lives lost due to locked stairwells and exits. That fire was a major turning point in labor conditions in New York City and around the world, as well as bringing light to women's terrible working conditions. And I wrote him back, and it turns out Ade, E-D-E is his name, Fox, is running for Brooklyn City Council.
Crazy.
I said, you know what, dude? We'll plug your campaign.
Yeah.
www.edefox.com. Adefox.com. And good luck in your bid for city council in Brooklyn.
Yeah, if you wear sunglasses with neon arms on them and
yeah.
you're into like your pro-union, I would say go vote for this
I
guy.
Think we can help garner you a little bit of the hipster vote.
Maybe.
Since we are both aging hipsters.
I am not a hipster.
You are now.
Dude, I am not a hipster. And I may be aging, but I'm not a hipster.
Well, you look a lot more like a hipster than you used to.
Well, if you, I guess if you have a political campaign you're running, we want to hear about it. We heard from another guy in Maryland, a state legislator. He's a legislator for Maryland.
Oh, yeah.
Who was writing about human trafficking. That
That's
guy.
Right.
Shout out to that guy as well.
Yeah.
But if you are a politician that listens to Stuff You Should Know, we want to hear your viewpoints. Let us know what you got to say, how we're helping you, how we can help more, that kind of thing, you know?
Sure.
You can tweet to us. Just please don't send us a picture of your junk like other politicians. To SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us an email to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?